ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Taking time for thought and reflection for a grieving community. Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Local Radio.
Well, in the aftermath of the horrific events at Bondi last night, today the National Cabinet met and decided to pursue tighter gun laws, including banning non-citizens from owning firearms. Now, the government also faces calls for an inquiry into the failure of its intelligence services to prevent the nation's deadliest terror attack, after the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation confirmed that it had investigated one of the gunmen for 6 months in 2019 over an association with a Sydney-based Islamic State cell. They concluded, apparently, that there was not a threat. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is facing growing criticism that his government has failed to adequately combat anti-Semitism in the community. Well, in this first hour tonight, I'll speak with Neil Fergus of the security risk management firm Intelligent Risks. You might recall some time ago I had an interesting conversation with Neil. I thought we'd bring him back. We'll cross to Bondi Beach. ABC reporter Ben Knight has been there doing a sterling job reporting throughout much of the day, is still there, and we'll grab his final thoughts before the night closes there on a vigil and, of course, very important memorial of flowers, which seems to be growing by the hour there too. Also tonight, I'll speak to Aftab Malik. Now, remember, Aftab was the federal government-appointed special envoy to combat Islamophobia in Australia. He was appointed in September this year to get his thoughts on how all of these events affect the Islamic community in Australia. And also, I'll speak with Sarah Schwartz, Executive Officer at the Jewish Council of Australia and human rights lawyer as well, the Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, has laid the blame for Sunday's events fairly and squarely at the Australian government. I'm interested to get her take on that and also yours too a bit later on in the program. So to it. Neil Fergus is the CEO and founder of Intelligent Risk and joins us this evening. Neil, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Philip. Good evening to you.
Strong criticism of the Prime Minister and the government for not doing enough on anti-Semitism. I mean, this was a line that was repeated continuously throughout the day. What do you make of it?
Well, unsurprising. I'm not Jewish, but I attended the anti-Semitism summit in February earlier this year at the Central Synagogue. There was a lot of rhetoric, Philip, and very little action. And what we've seen, and there's been a lot of talk about how we need to harden the laws, but in fact people have not been put before the courts to test the efficacy of the current laws. And frankly, I'm not sure that they're not fit for purpose. And it's gone on way too long. And what has that done? It's fueled anti-Semitism. I'm not saying these attacks yesterday wouldn't have occurred if that had happened. I'm just saying.
Well, what are you saying needs to be tightened? I mean, you mean the Racial Discrimination Act, the anti-vilification laws, the hate speech laws?
I'm aware of cases where there has been the most horrific threats made over social media and over telephone, text messages, and nobody's been charged. We've had 2 years of this stuff going on from the Sydney Opera House, Philip, where you and I know damn well the chants were gas the Jews and F the Jews. But we were told there was no evidence that would warrant prosecution. So there's been no detriment to people pursuing this agenda. Again, I do stress that doesn't mean yesterday's attack, which appears prima facie to be IS motivated, wouldn't have occurred. But we have, as a society, a multicultural society, unfortunately allowed the pursuit of a segment of our society to go on pretty much unchallenged. It's disgusting.
What would you have? So you're saying what you would have liked to seen more state government prosecutions of these things?
Absolutely. There has been prima facie the case for a number of prosecutions, and we keep hearing that the laws need to be tightened. I'm not sure they need to be because they haven't actually been
tested. The laws are quite explicit, actually, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
I was looking at them today. I'm not this case for saying the laws need to be tightened. Well, the laws are quite explicit. You know, you can't vilify, use hate speech against people.
People said they were draconian.
That's right.
So why haven't these laws been tested before the courts? Let the magistrates do their job. They haven't. We've seen some shocking stuff go on that's permitted anti-Semitism not only to continue but to prosper, if you like. It's a terrible time.
Would you have included...
I stress that doesn't mean that these horrific attacks yesterday wouldn't have occurred, because prima facie it appears, it's alleged that they're motivated by Islamic State.
We don't know at this stage, do we? We don't know, and there'll be speculation in all sorts of directions, but there does seem to be suggestions that is the direction in which some explanation of it may lie, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Prime Minister was asked on 7:30 report, on the 7:30 report TV program tonight, how, given the ASIO boss Mike Burgess had identified anti-Semitism as the number one priority in terms of threat to life, and therefore shouldn't something like this attack have been contemplated? This was the Prime Minister's response.
Well, of course, we remain ever vigilant, but this was an event, of course, of a father and son engaged. They weren't part of a wider cell, is the advice that we have up to this point. And therefore, the detection wasn't there. We have given every resource to our police agencies, to our intelligence agencies. We provide support to them because we have confidence in their ability to do the best that they can. But tragically, in 2025, we live in a dangerous time. And these two evil people have engaged in this act of anti-Semitism, driven by ideology. It's an extreme perversion of Islam that has resulted in these catastrophic consequences. And my heart goes out to the grieving families tonight.
He went on to explain that there was no evidence of any connection that they've been advised about with any other groups or individuals. I mean, you can't blame governments for following a advice they're given from their specialist agencies, can you?
No, absolutely, Philip. But we expect our specialist agencies to concentrate on what the requirements are under the Act, not to be stage managing narcissistic press conferences every week. And that's what Mike Burgess has been doing. And frankly, I think the public, seriously, has had enough of that. Just burrow down and do the job that you're engaged to do. And the reality is, we have heard a number of, we're all tired of the remarks about unprecedented, unprecedented, unprecedented. Mike, please get your agency focused on the core facts, which is the protection of life. And don't tell us about somebody who may have been connected with a Tibetan group somewhere doing something. Yes, foreign interference is important, but as we've all seen yesterday, the reality is this is what we expect from our National Security Agency. And don't call it a spy agency anymore, Mike Burgess. It's a security agency to protect Australians. Time to get on with that job.
Nevertheless, you've worked in government at a high level. And in this particular instance, ASIO looked at this bloke for 6 months. Found some things, but not enough to think that there was going to be a credible threat. We don't know enough about that investigation, do we? But I mean, are you saying, prima facie, of course, that was a wrong assessment, but perhaps at the time it wasn't.
No, and I don't want to criticise Mike Burgess and the organisation for that, because I don't know. The reality is the coroner, this is going to be the biggest coronial inquiry in New South Wales history since the Grenville train disaster, which I was a kid when that happened, Philip. But, you know, this is bigger than the Lynn Cafe. There are a whole number of issues that need to be exhumed. And I certainly don't want to criticise Mike Burgess and ASIO in relation to that without full knowledge of the facts. But the reality is this is what the Australian public expects: legality, ethics and accountability, and focus on the key issues. And yesterday was a catastrophic disaster for our country.
Well, manifestly. Neil Fergus is the CEO and founder of Intelligent Risk. We're talking to him about some of the, I guess, the policy, the priority issues, the way that governments and specialist agencies interact here and what might have been done better. Can we talk about gun laws? The National Cabinet today agreed to strengthen gun laws. Now, this is the Prime Minister, this is the Prime Minister on that score.
Quite clearly, the Howard government's gun laws have made an enormous difference in Australia and are a proud moment of reform, quite rightly, achieved across the Parliament with bipartisan support. If we need to toughen these up, if there's anything we can do, I'm certainly up for it.
When you look at this massacre along with Christchurch, Port Arthur and the almost daily mass shootings in the US, it's you might say, well, gun laws need to be. Mercifully, mass shootings in Australia are mercifully rare. If they were tighter, would that make a difference anyway to determine individuals such as these two?
Most of the Australian population is shocked and horrified to know that the one of the individuals obviously was a registered gun holder and had six high-powered weapons.
All legal.
Living in a metropolitan area, not on a farm. We're not talking about rabbit shoots here. And I do not profess to be an expert on this area, but we all went, holy Moses. We thought we had the best gun control laws in the Western world. Something seems to have gone awry here. Not quite sure why. As I say, I'm no expert on this, but I've had messages today from a number of people who live on the land who say that the local constabulary come to them every year and check, where are your guns, the guns you're licensed for, where are they secured, are they separated from the, it doesn't need to be in a safe, but away from children, and where's the ammunition, and they do that check annually. I'm yet to hear that that's been going on in metropolitan areas with people who are licensed gun holders. And again, Philip, if I may, why has this individual been permitted to have six guns? And we're not just talking about the couple of shotties, the shotguns, we're talking about Remingtons. I think you, I, and most of your listeners have been living in a false cloud of we do have the best gun control laws, but, you know, in fact, we really don't. I don't know. And the coroner's
I suppose my question is, from a risk management point of view, which is your field of expertise, how much can you approach risk by saying, well, you know, I mean, because a determined individual is going to find a way, is a tighter gun controls, in a sense, a risk diversion, you know, in a sense, from the real issue, which is stopping determined individuals and getting hold of guns.
I'm not aware of the personal circumstances of the individual, but if they're a hunter, do they need more than one or two guns? I doubt it very much. How has that happened? There was a lot of confusion yesterday in the tragedy that unfolded at Bondi, where people were speculating there were three perpetrators. And that was because, I don't want to send you and the listeners to sleep here, but we saw that heroic effort of actually attacking one of the shooters, taking the gun away, and he retreated. And then a short time later, we saw there were two shooters up the top. So people said, well, there must be three, because this guy didn't have a gun anymore. We now know they had six guns up there. Why? Mm. Why are they licensed for that amount of guns?
Yeah, no, well, there are questions. Why, indeed. Neil, appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, Philip. Thank you.
Neil Fergus is the CEO of Intelligent Risk. He's had a 20-year career in the Australian government, including as a senior diplomat, and founded Intelligent Risk, which is one of the top firms in the world in this in the area of risk management and assessment. Philip Clark with you. This is Nightlife. You're on ABC Radio all around the country. Crowds, of course, gathering at Bondi today, and already a mountain of flowers are being laid at the Bondi Pavilion in memory of those who were so savagely slaughtered. ABC reporter Ben Knight's been there for much of the day, manfully reporting for us. So we'll go across to Ben in a moment as the night settles and to get the scene and find out just exactly what's going on. 1-300-800-222 is my number two. You remember the text line, 0467-922-702. 1-300-800-222 is the number, and the text 0467-922-702 if you would like to join us as well. I would love you to be part of the program tonight.
Mindful of the lives touched and trying to help you comprehend. Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Local Radio.
On the 30th September 2024, the Australian government announced the appointment of Aftab Malik as Special Envoy to combat Islamophobia in Australia. As a Special Envoy, Aftab's job is to listen to and engage with Muslim Australians, the wider Australian community and all levels of government on the most effective way to combat the growing problem of Islamophobia. There was a special envoy for anti-Semitic matters and in Australia as well. Aftab, good evening to you. Sorry, if we've got Aftab, Aftab, good evening to you, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you very much for squeezing me in tonight.
No, we're not squeezing you in, I can assure you of that. But thanks for joining us. But from your point of view, what do the events of yesterday mean, do you think, for the Islamic community? Because there's going to be a reaction to this, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I've been talking pretty much all day to members of the community, and I would say that the reactions are not dissimilar from the wider members of the community. Heartbreak, shock, and disbelief. I think this is what I'm picking up from individuals. I've spoken to so many different people today. Some have visited synagogues to express their condolences. Others have given blood, and some have even told me that they intend to lay flowers at Bondi. But all have expressed their horror and grief at the events that transpired last night.
You were appointed as a special envoy to combat Islamophobia. Do you have concerns that as a result of this, of these tragic events, that the problems of that particular scourge will increase?
Look, the fact remains that killing civilians is wrong, and retaliatory attacks against Muslim civilians are equally unacceptable. Unfortunately, with events such as these, Muslims are bracing themselves for a backlash, and the Premier of New South Wales has stated unequivocally, very clearly, that vigilante retaliation would not be tolerated. Unfortunately, how we respond as a nation really does matter, and we must avoid wild speculation and stand united. But as with these cases, the internet is awash with mis and disinformation and wild aspects of hatred. So Muslims are receiving messages such as the Bondi attack has happened, we can kill Muslims now. There's also a promotion of an event to riot and bash Middle Eastern people. So these things, as you can expect, Muslims are deeply concerned about these things.
There's been a lot of discussion today, Aftab, about whether you can legislate your way out of these long and deep-seated problems in society. I mean, people have said the government wasn't strong enough and hasn't acted, more robustly to identify and prosecute anti-Semitic behaviour. There's plenty of Islamophobic behaviour in Australia as well. What do you think about these arguments that government should be doing things better, that the law should be tighter, there should be more prosecutions. When I suppose I said at the beginning here that perhaps you can prosecute and legislate your way out of these issues. What do you think about that?
Look, I really do believe legislation is important because it provides a safeguard. It provides a mental safeguard for citizens to know that they are allowed to live freely in Australia with safety. So absolutely there has to be some sort of legislative framework. But a lot of it rests on human decency. And the fact of the matter is we are talking a night after a tragedy that has really taken place. And I really want to emphasize that right now. I think what is of paramount is that we dignify those that have been killed and really comes to terms with the cost of the human tragedy that occurred last night.
Mm. Yes, because one of the things that doesn't get reported at times like this is the degree of fellow feeling between communities, which has in Australia always been there, hasn't it?
Oh, it's a good question. I think that part of the problems is that people tend to live in comfortable silos, and it takes a tragedy, unfortunately, to bring people together. So while we have this unfathomable tragedy that's taking place, I'm quite comforted by speaking to so many people across Australia, as I've done today, from the Muslim community, who really are just trying to figure out what is the best way to go forward without causing anyone inconvenience or triggering feelings towards people. So as I said earlier, a number of people have sort of told me what they're trying to do. And a lot of people, for example, have said to me that they are going to give blood today.
Hmm. Yeah, you've been asked to report to the government, which I think is going to happen, isn't it? What do you think the thrust of all that is likely to be?
Well, I handed a report over to the government in September. It has 54 recommendations that were based upon an extensive consultation of Muslim communities around Australia. Mm. And at the heart of those recommendations were really those concerns and those issues that really go to the core of really addressing Islamophobia. The challenge that I found is that because of there's an absence of highly visible acts of mass violence against Muslims, that does not equate to an absence of hate and discrimination. Islamophobia is not always violent or overt, for example. It is often a pervasive type or prejudice that limits Muslims' ability to really participate in society as equals. And that really is the challenge that I have in my role.
Mm. I think all Australians saw the actions of Ahmed Al-Ahmed, a Syrian Muslim immigrant whose refugee parents had just arrived from Syria. Ahmed, a 43-year-old father of two girls, risked his life by tackling the alleged shooter and seizing the gun during Sunday's attack. It was quite astonishing footage to watch. I'm sure most people listening have seen it by now. This is his parents being interviewed today on ABC Radio.
He has a fruit shop that sells fruit and other produce. He's been here since 2006, and he's an Australian citizen. What happened is, his friend told him, let's go have coffee at Bondi. They got there and were shocked to see armed men firing their weapons and terrorists. Their lives were in danger. He noticed one of the armed men at a distance, from him hiding behind a tree. My son is a hero. He served with the police and in the Central Security Forces, and he has the impulse to protect people. When he saw people lying on the ground and the blood everywhere, immediately his conscience and his soul compelled him to pounce on one of the terrorists and to rid him of his weapon. At the same moment, the armed man's other friend was on the bridge, or whoever he is. I feel pride and honour because my son is a hero of Australia.
I'm proud that my son was helping people. He saved lives, souls. God would not harm him because he was a do-gooder. My son has always been brave, helps people. He's like that. He saw they were dying and people were losing their lives. And when that guy ran out of ammo, he took it from him, but he was hit. We pray that God saves him.
Yeah, it was quite a scene, after, wasn't it? I imagine the Islamic community is responding to that too, are they?
They are indeed, and so has the Premier, who saw that viral video, and he said it's the most unbelievable scene that he has ever seen. And it's through the heroic acts of Ahmed al-Ahmed that the Premier said that many, many people are alive as a result of his bravery last night. I think it's really important to mention that we know what the motives of Ahmed are, because he articulated that to his cousin, and he said he really pleaded God to give him courage to what he did. And so in that drastic, terrifying evening, there was a Muslim Australian who was among both the victims and heroes of that night, because we do have to remember that Ahmed was shot twice while intervening to disarm the attacker.
Yeah, no, indeed. The symbolism, I think, didn't escape too many people either. Aftab Malik is with us, the government's special envoy to combat Islamophobia in Australia. What do you think the way forward is, Aftab? This is a root and branch, you know, culture all the way through to legislation response, isn't it?
Look, I really think it goes back to my message that I said at the beginning. Right now, it really is about dignifying those that have been killed, caring and supporting for those who have been injured, and really ensuring that the perpetrators are held to account. So, you know, I think the community and myself are really focused to make sure that the Jewish community and all those victims know that we are here. We want to reach out to them. It's been said, wrap our arms around them. And really, we stand in solidarity. I think that's what's the most important thing that we all have to be focusing on. And also, the fact of the matter is, as mentioned, about how we respond is really important. I think it's essential that at this moment, we don't allow words of hate and violence to drive fear and division. That is something that we need to avoid at all costs.
One of the things I think, Aftab, that Australians hate the most is these ancient enmities being brought to our shores. We, you know, have always prided ourselves on a country which values tolerance and free speech and an open ability to worship peacefully and to live peacefully. And, you know, these ancient enmities which have bedeviled societies overseas, many of people come here as refugees from those communities, but the idea that these enmities are brought with them is something that distresses Australians a lot, distresses you, I'm sure, and every sensible person looking at it. How do we stop this?
I would have to push back a little on some of your comments. I don't think what we're talking about is an ancient hatred by a long shot. I think just a grapple of history would sort of inform us of that. But you're right, everybody who comes to Australia, they come here to resettle. Many people are coming to Australia for a brand new shiny life. They want to contribute. There are people like Ahmed al-Ahmed who came over here, who's got a small fruit shop, and he saw a moment and he didn't think twice. He was compelled by his religion to act and intervene upon an act in which many other people would have frozen with terror, but he decided to act upon what he believed is something that would be important for him. And that's what we really got to focus on. We've got to focus on the fact that while there are individuals such as the two alleged perpetrators who committed these evil acts, and they're condemned and defined by those acts and those alone, I think it's for the majority of us to come together, to unite, to stand together and share in that grief and disbelief of those who have been impacted by this wanton act of violence.
Aftab, it's been terrific to talk with you. I appreciate your time on what's been a very, very sad and tragic day.
No, again, thank you for giving me some time to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Aftab Malik is the Special Envoy to Combat Islamophobia in Australia, and one of the many voices, I think, calling for calm and tolerance in the community. Ben Knight, as I say, is an ABC reporter who's been doing sterling work down at the Bondi Pavilion for much of the day. As the day winds to an end, at least in eastern Australia, he joins us this evening for a look at how the day has ended after this tragic series of events. Ben, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's just winding up now, actually. So it's like it's been very, very busy down here at this vigil just in front of Bondi Pavilion. And as you would be aware, it's late on a Monday night and it's a bit chilly with the ocean breeze and it's just wrapping up now. But it's been really quite a challenging day, a draining day, but a remarkable day, I think.
Yeah. What there's, or from what some of the television pictures I was seeing before night fell, Ben, there was already a mountain of flowers growing. You would expect that probably to continue. They're doing that in the midst of active police investigations as well, aren't they? Have the police allowed people to come to that part of the pavilion while they continue their investigations on the rest of the site?
Yeah. So it's very well tightly controlled. So you know, the esplanade just behind the pavilion is closed off to traffic, and that remains the case tonight. I've got no idea when that will open. So it's all foot traffic. There's police tape up. The crime scene itself remains cordoned off tonight. It's interesting to look at, because when you look in there, I initially just went over and had a look to see if I could see the police forensic teams at work. But I was sort of struck by what I could see, and it wasn't things like the bloodstains, although you can see that. It's the fact that you're seeing the detritus of the moment as it was when people fled. So you're seeing the rubbish that people from people's picnics that they didn't pack up or have time to put in the bin because they were running from a terrorist attack. You can see people's cars are in there. Who knows when they're going to be able to get their cars out? But there'll be bags, phones, hats, keys, all sorts of things in there. Just this frozen moment in time while the forensic team go through there. And literally on the other side of the police tape, just about 50 metres away, you have this incredible mountain of flowers, which started off with one or two bunches early this morning. Anthony Albanese came along quite early and added one. I think it was a pretty small pile back then, but boy, has it grown during the day.
Yeah, what is the place going to be? I mean, Bondi Beach is a massive precinct. It's not just the beach; it's the pavilion, it's the car park. There are parks, of course, where the Hanukkah festival was being celebrated. There are exercise areas, there are embankments. It's a glorious place to recreate. Is it going to be open tomorrow? Do you think this police investigation is going to take days?
The beach was open today. There were people swimming. I was walking through Bondi on my way down there, and it was a glorious day. And honestly, you probably wouldn't have known other than Bondi was a bit quieter than it would normally be. But you had people walking around in their activewear. One guy walked past me with his surfboard with no shirt on his way back from, and I was, well, that's interesting. And as I went down there, I had a look. Yeah, there's people swimming. The beach is open. It's just the crime scene that's been closed off and the roads that have been closed off.
Yeah, people gathered. I was listening to the radio too, but the people gathering to sing tonight as well, weren't they?
Yeah. The whole thing I've described as pretty organic, and we'll talk about how it sort of started off with one, two, three, half a dozen bunches of flowers, and then obviously that sort of struck a nerve or struck a chord, or maybe that's just what people naturally felt like doing. Like, this is where we're going to go, and this is how we're going to show our respect or our condolence or our empathy. And it grew, and there were plenty of Jewish Australians there. There were plenty of non-Jewish Australians there. Because it sort of developed on its own, there was no PA system. There were no speeches. There was nothing. And it drove itself. And so various points during the afternoon, there might be a group that would start singing a song in Hebrew. And then from various points, other voices would join in. And then there'd be another one that was a bit more up-tempo, and there would be clapping along with the song, and then it would stop and then might go quiet for an hour. And then someone else might walk into the circle and decide that they had some things that they wanted to say to the group. And that's just how it was. It got a little bit more organized towards sunset. In fact, right about the time when it would have been almost 24 hours to the minute since the terror unfolded the day before, but you had the lighting of the Hanukkah candle for the second night of Hanukkah. So a lot of Jewish people who made sure that they were there for that particular moment and doing something that, people were trying to do the night before that people would have been doing themselves anyway, perhaps in at other venues or at home or with their family, but they were doing it in front of a massive bunch of flowers next to a crime scene where 15 people were murdered.
Yeah, indeed. Ben, thanks for your work today. It's been quite something on what's a challenging day for everybody, reporters included. Appreciate your time.
Good on you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben Knight. Our ABC reporter has been there for much of the day. As the night settled, or has settled now, in the eastern part of Australia, giving us some flavour of what the scene is at the Bondi Pavilion. 1-300-800-222 is my number if you'd like to call. We're going to talk to Sarah Schwartz next up. This is Nightlife.
Mindful of the lives touched and trying to help you comprehend. Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Local Radio.
Sarah Schwartz is the Executive Officer of the Jewish Council of Australia. She's also a human rights lawyer and joins us this evening for her take on what has happened. Sarah, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me.
You grew up in Sydney. You're now Melbourne-based, though. Tell me how the Melbourne Jewish community has reacted to this.
The Jewish community is pretty small, and we all know people who were impacted. We all know someone who knows someone who lost someone. I think it's fair to say that this has sent shockwaves through the entirety of the Jewish community, both here and I think globally as well, and through probably the entire Australian community. You know, we're not a place that has mass racialized shooting events. This is, it's pretty horrific.
Mm. Yeah, there's been a lot of, been criticism sustained throughout the day that, the government has to wear some of the blame for this, for not being stricter on anti-Semitic behaviour, that the Jewish community been warning the government about the rise in anti-Semitic behaviour. What do you make of that criticism?
Look, I think I was really pleased to see both the federal and New South Wales governments moving quite quickly to commit to taking serious action to strengthen gun laws as a priority. I think, incidents like this, we need to actually do everything we can to not allow massacres like this to happen again, and we need to treat this incident quite specifically. And I do think that it's really important, moments like this are really rife for divisive fear-mongering, people who want to make opportunistic political points and stoke division and more racism. And I think we've seen some of that been playing out already, on social media, on other platforms. And I think it's really important in this time for us to let the government do its job and actually see where this investigation goes, to look at it and to ensure that we take action to prevent acts of extreme violence from occurring, but also to take this moment to ensure that we're coming together as a community, because I think that's what we saw in Bondi tonight. That's what we saw. There was a beautiful healing ceremony in Hyde Park. We've seen outpourings of support from across the community, and I think that this is our moment to come together as a community and say that we stand against these types of senseless violence. Racist, violent events.
Mm. Yeah, the state governments in particular ought to be prosecuting people at a greater rate. We've seen, in recent months, horrendous incidents of neo-Nazis parading in black shirts outside the New South Wales Parliament with carefully constructed signs, which, their intent is perfectly plain. They apparently had advice that they couldn't be prosecuted for those signs. Many people thought the police should have been in amongst them with truncheons and broken it up. Do you think the government's been too hands-off about these things?
Yeah, I think we have serious issues of racism in this country. That is without a question. We have seen, this is the most extreme act of racism I think that I've ever seen, a mass shooting event that is targeted at Jewish people. And yeah, we have seen other incidents of racism, which makes everyone feel really scared in this moment and has led to this sense of fear and unsafety that people have in this moment. And it is really important for our government to be taking action against racism. I mean, I'm, I think it's really important for our government to be taking action against the far right to address specific incidents like this. But I would really urge governments to be taking, you know, it's moments like this where people can and where governments can move, you know, either towards measures that aren't grounded in evidence and knee-jerk policies to feel like they're doing something, or to move, and I think that we are seeing this amongst our policymakers and governments, you know, move towards actually taking considered action, using this as a time to heal as a community, thinking about how we can prevent acts of mass violence, taking communities' concerns really seriously and listening and thinking about how we address the core of these issues. I mean, there are real questions in relation to this incident, like why, like we know that this person had a gun license, and that there was some knowledge of him to intelligence organisations. I think there are some really serious questions that need to be asked in light of this incident. And, you know, we can't jump to conclusions about what exact policy solutions we're looking for. But I think that we really need to avoid that sort of knee-jerk spreading of disinformation, fear-mongering, but also the blaming of other racialised groups. Because I think that that's something that we've seen the far right latch onto in this moment. Mm. And I've seen a lot of commentary from far right actors and even far right politicians, you know, using this as a moment to spread racism. But yet we also saw, you know, actions of heroes like this Muslim father, who Ahmed Al-Ahmed, who stepped in and tackled the gunmen and saved countless lives. And, you know, I think that that story has moved so many of us and should show us that our path forward needs to be grounded in that shared humanity and compassion and sanctity of human life, and not the targeting of other racialized communities, because that's not going, that's only going to sow division. It's not going to bring us together. And that's what we really need in this moment.
Sarah Schwartz is with us, Executive Officer of the Jewish Council of Australia. She's also a human rights lawyer. Overnight, we heard this from the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu.
Your government did nothing to stop the spread of anti-Semitism in Australia. You did nothing to curb the cancer cells that were growing inside your country. You took no action. You let the disease spread. And the result is the horrific attacks on Jews we saw today.
Well, the Prime Minister responded to this on 7:30 report tonight, when he asked if he had a comment on it.
What they require me as Australia's Prime Minister at this time is to bring the nation together, is to promote unity, is to make sure that what the terrorists seek, which is to divide us as a nation, to pit Australian against Australian, to say this is a moment of national unity where we need to come together, and in particular at this time, we need to wrap our arms around members of the Jewish community who are going through an extraordinarily difficult period, not just those who are grieving loved ones and friends, but every member of the Jewish community in Australia. This has been an extraordinarily traumatic 24 hours. My job is to provide support for the Jewish community, is to make it clear that Australians overwhelmingly stand with the Jewish community at this difficult time.
Mm. What do you think, Sarah, about those comments of Benjamin Netanyahu? Are they reasonable? Are they at all fair? Are they at all helpful?
I mean, I can't see why Benjamin Netanyahu is being quoted as some representative of the diaspora Jewish community. I think, you know, he's a wanted war criminal, and he doesn't have the support of the vast majority of diaspora Jewish people. And he's someone who has outwardly shown his disdain, you know, including through his Ministry for Diaspora Affairs, for diaspora Jewry. He doesn't care about the diversity of views amongst diaspora Jewry. He cares about maintaining power. And he is someone himself who has been involved in the needless slaughter and racialized violence. So I don't think that he's someone who should really be quoted as any sort of representative of us. And I do agree with the words of the Prime Minister. You know, we can't let these external actors and politicians, and I think Netanyahu is one of those, try to divide us and pit us against each other in moments like this. So I would really caution against seeing someone who is a war criminal who is, as warrants out for his arrest, as some sort of representative of Jewish people, because he is not a representative of Jewish people. He's not a Jewish person in Australia, and I would say that he's not someone who has any care for the safety and well-being of Jews like myself who live in Australia.
Tell me what you think the way forward is, Sarah.
I think the way forward is a path that is grounded in our shared humanity, the sanctity of all human life, and that we need to be seeing this moment as an opportunity for us to, as the Prime Minister said, come together in unity with each other to show that we stand against these forms of senseless violence, to take sensitive evidence-based measures which are targeted at addressing racism, to preventing events like this from ever occurring again, and to stand with each other against all forms of racism and oppression. Because at the end of the day, I think what moments like this show is that our safety is all bound up with each other, and that, you know, we should all be fighting for an Australia in which we're all safe and able to practice our different cultures and religions and be with our community in safety.
Appreciate your time, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Schwartz is the Executive Officer at the Jewish Council of Australia and a human rights lawyer.
Mindful of the lives touched and trying to help you comprehend. Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Local Radio.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about this with you too. We'll have time later too, but Darcy's been hanging on for a bit on the line as well. Darcy from Moree, good evening to you. Well, welcome to Nightlife. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good.
That's good. Hey, I don't think gun laws are the answer to this one, Phil, in all honesty.
Mm.
Guns don't kill people. People kill people. And if this man was known to Australian ASICs and stuff, why was he allowed to have a gun license? Because at the end of the day, Phil, I'm a professional shooter and I'm a farmer. I shoot and I farm for a job. So guns are just a tool of the trade for me.
Hmm.
And saying that I need one gun is absolutely ludicrous, because I need more to do what I do. But if I go to the pub and get in a fight, I lose my gun license. That's it. See you later, gone.
Hmm.
So how has he still been allowed to have a gun license?
It's a legitimate question, which a lot of people are asking. A lot of people are asking Darcy in particular, because of his relation, his association, of course, with his son, who'd been investigated by ASIO. They knew that, and they, if they'd done even a cursory check, would have seen, hang on, this bloke's father has got 6 licensed weapons at his house. Can that be allowed to stand? And I think a lot of people are asking why.
Like I said, gun laws aren't the answer, because no matter what, there is always a black market for guns. And the police know that, the government knows that, and they won't stop us.
Mm.
People, if you're determined enough, you will get a weapon. But more people get stabbed, killed in car accidents than killed by guns every year. The fact of the matter is it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people. And how are these people getting let into our country when they could potentially be radicalised already?
Hmm. Yep, well, they're all questions that are being asked as well. All right, Darcy, thank you, mate. We'll continue the discussion at the end of the night too, in the last hour in our issues of the day, because I do want to have a discussion. But there are lots of things. There are lots of questions that I think are of legitimate concern. By way of information, the two shooters, as you know, a father and the son. The father was not an Australian citizen. He came here on a student visa, then got a spouse visa. This is from the government, and has continued on with that. The son was born here and so therefore is an Australian citizen. So that's the residence issue, but, you know, there are questions being raised about the visa issues, and legitimately so.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.